Bibles, if you will, please, find 1 Kings chapter number 1. 1 Kings chapter number 1. This is the same passage that we read this morning, but you understand when the preacher gets to that certain age, he starts repeating himself. And pray for my job, please. What job? I'm the one going to repeat it. 1 Kings chapter 18, what a tremendous story to illustrate and show us the true life of this subject. Look at verse 24 and join me on all of the odd numbered verses, please. And Nathan said, "My Lord, O King, hast thou said, Adonijah shall reign after me, and he shall sit upon my throne? For he is gone down this day, and has slain oxen and fat cattle and sheep in abundance, and hath called all the king's sons and the captains of the host, and Abiathar the priest, and behold, they eat and drink before him, and say, God save King Adonijah. But me, even thy servant, and Zadok the priest, and Benaiah the son of Jehoiada, and thy servant Solomon, hath he not called? Is this thing done by my lord the king, and thou hast not showed it unto thy servant, who should sit on the throne of my lord the king after him?" Then King David answered and said, "Call me Bathsheba." And she came into the king's presence and stood before the king. And the king sware and said, "As the Lord liveth, that hath redeemed my soul out of all distress, even as I swear unto thee by the Lord God of Israel, saying, Assuredly Solomon thy son shall reign after me, and he shall sit upon my throne in my stead, even so will I certainly do this day." Then Bathsheba bowed with her face to the earth and did reverence to the king and said, "Let my lord King David live forever." And King David said, "Call me Zadok the priest, and Nathan the prophet, and Benaiah the son of Jehoiada." And they came before the king. The king also said unto them, "Take with you the servants of your lord, and cause Solomon my son to ride upon mine own mule, and bring him down to Gihon. And let Zadok the priest and Nathan the prophet anoint him their king over Israel. And blow ye the trumpet with the trumpet, and say, God save King Solomon."
Here in 1 Kings chapter 1 is very unique story, and honestly, one that, as Brother Arcola said earlier, fits the topic, in my opinion, perfectly. I want you to look at 1 Kings chapter 1, verse number 1, and I want you to think for a second. Now King David was old, stricken in years, and they covered him with clothes, but he got no heat. You realize that King David was just 70 years old there? He had been king for 40 years. He took the throne at age 30. He wasn't what you would call old. But the Bible says that he was old and stricken in years. He's like some of you. You got no heat. Doesn't matter what the temperature is. You complain that it's cold. I wasn't looking at you, Loretta, but you pointed at yourself. He has made plans here in chapter 1. King David had made plans for Solomon to rule after him. But as David got older and he was in this state, Adonijah, one of his other sons, decided he was going to do what he wanted and take over the family. And he took it upon himself and he called everybody except those closest to David and Solomon to the party and anointed himself as king. word gets back to Bathsheba, and she went to David and said, David, is this really what you want? And he said, no. And Nathan, the preacher, came in after her and said, look, you got problems, David. You had a plan, but your plan's not working because you're not able to keep up with it. And notice his family had to step in and others had to step in to make them do what needed done. This is a beautiful picture of what many will face. I call it knowing how to parent your parents, or how to care for the caregivers. That type of situation. This is a difficult and a confusing time, but one that needs addressed. And listen to me very carefully. Somebody has to be clear-headed enough to step up and take charge. I wish you knew how many people suffer unduly because they're afraid to tell their mom or their dad they're not capable to handle life on their own anymore. I know a situation right now with an elderly lady in her late 80s living by herself with two adult daughters that are afraid to tell mom she shouldn't be living by herself. She can't control her own bodily functions in public, and yet they let her live at home by herself. They have to go check on her two or three times a day to make sure she's not burning the house down with stuff left on the stove. They're not sure if she's taking her meds or not. But because she doesn't want to do something, well, mom said it, so we're just going to do what mom said. Well, guess what? There comes a point in time where it doesn't matter what mom said. Mom doesn't know what she's saying. Right. And it's not what's best for her. Right. Now, I know that situation personally that's going on. And it's worse than that even. So David's wife, David's son, have to step up and say, Dad, this was the plan. This is what's happening. What do you want done? And he went and enacted the original plan. Thank God it was King Solomon and not King Adonijah. Now, all that to be said this way. David had a preset plan. David got to a point where he should not be king and should not be leading. And it took family members to step up and make him aware of it. Everybody under the sound of my voice will face this in some way, somehow. Either with your parents or someone in your family, or you will be the one that somebody needs to step up and do this with. This applies to everybody at every age level, even if you're a child. You don't know it yet, but it's coming. Now, this transition doesn't have to be bad, but there's going to be transitions that take place in life this way. Everybody listen to me very carefully here. Every transition doesn't have to be a hostile takeover. The only reason we're having a hostile takeover in Iran right now is because you have people unwilling to give in. You only have to get tough with those that don't give in. And I'm going to say this in a way, I hope it does not come across the wrong way. You may face it one or two or three times in your life. I have faced it hundreds of times already in life. Please allow 40 years of working with this and helping people to help you get through this. I can't even begin to tell you, Brother Kevin, so many times just today said, preacher, so much stuff you gave today, so many hours and so much wisdom and so much heartache people could avoid if they just listen. Yes, I'm trying to help you so that it doesn't have to be so bad. Every situation's different. There's no cookie cutter step-by-step process. But I'll give you a set of guidelines by which to follow that'll make that process so much easier for you. I didn't say it's going to be easy. But I can keep you from having so many problems. And I'm not going to rehash what I did this morning, but many of you need to listen and get caught up on some things. One of the things I said was this, you need to have a talk with your family, and you ought to do that when you're in your late 50s or early 60s. That's the time to do it. Say, what do you mean? That's way too early. Do it while everybody's in somewhat of a right mind. That line changes for some. I get that. But do it while you're strong and healthy and everybody's in good thinking. Don't wait till everybody's at a point of crisis. That's when bad decisions are made, and that's when things get stressful. So let me pick up with number five. We did the first four this morning. Number five. I want you to, this is a fairly long point, so listen very carefully here. We are all sinners, and sin causes the breakdown of life called death. As the mind naturally breaks down or accelerates due to injury or disease, you cannot believe that it will get better. Say, preacher, that's a strange point. No, what I'm saying is this. As people age, our brains automatically, biologically begin to shrink some. That's normal. Some of you don't have much to work with. You better be careful. But the other point is this. Due to injury or disease, that acceleration process is speeded up. That's what dementia and Alzheimer's is. Dementia is a biological thing. Alzheimer's is an injury or trauma-related thing. Everybody's brain shrinks at a certain time in age. There's no set age. But some people's do it at a much quicker pace. That's why they appear very confused. The old timers called it senility. Now we're in Alzheimer's and dementia, whatever you want to call it, doesn't matter to me. But staying busy helps slow the process down, but it cannot stop it. People that have active brains, that stay active, that stay busy, generally keep that breakdown process from happening. Something else, everybody look at me. Not hearing well accelerates that. Hearing aids can prevent dementia and Alzheimer's from accelerating. Yeah. There's people that think I'm kidding, but what happens is when you're not hearing things, certain parts of your brain stop working, which means that process starts breaking down that much faster. Begin having your ears checked in your 50s. Say why? Because if you can slow that process down, you may slow down dementia or Alzheimer's. The more you don't use your hearing, the more apt your brain is to start stopping. Because it's not sensing all the things it should to keep it active. That means just don't keep them in your pocket or on the shelf or on your dresser. It means put them in your ears and use them. But damage due to any of these processes, listen to me, accelerates the process. You've all bought a bag of grapes before. They all kind of go bad at different stages, but the ones that get bumped are the ones that go first. That's the same thing that happens with people's brains. Those that have injury to them, their brain begins to break down quicker. They're all going to break down. But here's what happens. When that breakdown starts, watch me, you then have to do something aggressive with it before it's gone. Don't deceive yourself into thinking that it's not happening to your loved one. Oh, that wouldn't happen to my mom. That wouldn't happen to my dad. That won't happen to me. Don't deceive yourself. It can happen to anybody. It can happen and will happen to everybody to a certain degree. One of the dangers of retiring is doing nothing. Then you have nothing to talk about and nothing to live for. Look how many people retire and die the first year after retirement. Heart attacks and different things. They're just not ready. Say, well, how do I know when it's time to retire? You'll know. But have something to do when you do retire. Don't just sit and spit and whittle. Your brain will go inactive. That's why a lot of older people repeat themselves. If they're not busy, they're not doing anything, they're not gathering new information, so all they can do is talk about old information. So one of the things to do is keep them active, keep them busy, keep them doing things. But when that repetition keeps coming and coming and coming and coming, signal, you know, something's not right here, Houston. When you've had the same conversation three times in 5 minutes, we got a problem here. Yeah. Now let me say this. There's no magic line to cross or to see. Now is the time. But I will say this. That line is sooner than you think. That line is sooner than you think. You can't wait until it's an emergency to start working on it. If you wait till it's an emergency to work on it, you're too late. When Dad's by himself and he burnt half the house down because he left the stove on because he hadn't been thinking right, it's too late to work on it. When I hear things like that, I know family hasn't been active to pay attention to the loved one. Our family knew a year and a half before Dad was diagnosed what Dad had. We saw it coming. Those who live farther away saw it faster than we did because we lived with it every day. You need to begin with the beginning signs and start watching and start preparing. It doesn't mean you go, oh, Dad forgot something. He's got Alzheimer's. Mom repeated herself. She's got Alzheimer's. No, that's not what I'm saying. But it should trigger something for you to start watching and paying attention more. This is the only way I know how to say it. When they no longer make safe decisions, you need to step up and make safe decisions for them. When they no longer make safe decisions, it's time for you to make safe decisions for them. Dad loved his garden. Oh, my soul, did he love his garden. Everybody in this room ate off of his garden. His patch of garden was about the size of one section of these chairs, and he could feed half the town. He had a truck farm there out of one little patch of ground. I pity the people if they planted grass seed in it. All I can tell you is they're going to mow every day. That is the richest soil in the state of West Virginia, that one little patch. There had to be 85 loads of manure on that, and God only knows what else. I know 10 or 15 loads of sand and everything else, and I mean, it was, you could, Brother Myers, you've tilled that stuff. You walk in and sink up halfway up your shins. It was great. You didn't have to turn it over. You just stuck something in it, and it just kind of... He loved that garden, but he had to go down the basement to go out to the garden because everything was downstairs. His legs were not good. It wasn't safe for Dad to be going up and down. He wasn't thinking right. He wasn't taking his meds right. We didn't know if he didn't take them or took too many. And then you add that to it, and then he was getting lost driving. You know, hello, Houston, the signs are there. But we had to start making decisions. He had a bathroom that he had built in the basement. He would go downstairs to shower and do all that stuff and then come back up. You know, Dad, you got two bathrooms up top. Don't go all the way to the basement. Well, that's mine. Well, both the others are too. Hard-headed old German. But when it's no longer safe for them with their decisions, you have to start making safe decisions for them. Now, I'm going to make a statement here, and I'm going to be very sensitive with it. Let them have their dignity, though.
That's good.
Amen. You're there to help them have what's best for them, even though they don't understand it. I don't know how many times my brother and I have said to my dad and my wife and my sister-in-law, "Dad, this is what's best for you." I remember the day we sat down and FaceTimed my brother. My brother and I had to tell my dad he had dementia. He said, "You told him?" "Yeah." "Why do you want to lie to him? Why do you want to withhold?" And he said, "Dad, we're going to have to make some decisions." "Yeah, I know the day was coming." He said, "I know my thinker isn't thinking right all the time." I said, "No, it's not. But Dad, we want what's best for you. I know that. I don't like it, but I know it." What did we do? We gave him his dignity. When things needed to change, we gave him his dignity. We let him choose between two rights, not right and wrong. You go back to almost like you would with a child and let them choose between two rights, not right and wrong. "No, Dad, you can't drive. Do you want to ride in my truck or your truck?" "Well, I want to drive." "No, I'm driving. Which truck do you want to ride in?" You see, I let him choose between two rights, not a right and a wrong. Well, they say the only reason I can't drive is because I'll get lost. That's not the only reason, but okay. Don't argue with them. Arguing only makes it worse for you and them. I don't argue with my dad. My dad still forgets we sold the house. He was griping about his tools the other day. "Where's my tools? Where's my tools? So-and-so's got my tool." "No, they don't, Dad." "Where are they?" "Chris has got these. Zach's got these. Josh has got these. They got a few things. Michael's got a few things. Family's got everything." Oh, okay. "What about my guns? You got this gun?" "Yeah, I got that one." "No, you got this one?" "No. Who's got it?" I still answer his questions. Say why? His dignity. Let them have their dignity. You don't have to argue and be mean and nasty about it. And the worst thing to say is, "Well, that's the 30th time we've talked about that." No, don't remind them of that. Answer their question. It doesn't have to be a hostile takeover. I'm going to say this, but it doesn't go over easy. It's not going to be an easy thing. It's not an easy conversation. But somebody has to breach it and have it. Did you hear what I just said? Nobody wants to talk to their parents or their children about these things, but it needs said. It's part of life. Somebody needs to know where all the important things are. Take it easy and allow them to stay informed and assure them you're going to keep them involved with every decision. When we put the house up for sale, we told Dad the house was up for sale. He didn't remember, but we told him. When we sold the house, I said, "Dad, we sold the house." "Oh, good. I knew we were going to have to do it. Now, what do I need to do to help?" "Nothing." I said, "We're going to get it all cleared out for you." "Oh, good, 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 good." I told him how much we sold it for. I said, "Did I do good?" He said, "He did real good." He said, "I guess I'm going to have to call Stephen and work on..." I said, "Nope, Chris has got that." "Oh, really?" I said, "Yep, all you got to do, spend your money. Don't worry about it." "Oh, I can do that." Yeah, I know that. You say, what was that? Giving my dad his dignity. Giving my dad his dignity. Please don't take this the wrong way. I have no idea how much my dad is worth to this day and don't care. He's got enough to take care of him. That's all I care about. Let's use it to take care of him. Whatever's left's left. It's not a matter of what I get, it's what's best for him. So, don't believe that it can't happen in your family. Number six. This is where it's going to hurt. Every family needs one person who will be in charge, but everybody should have input. Everybody, every family needs one person in charge, but everybody should have input. Adonijah, may have been older, but he was not the one David had appointed. Adonijah took it upon himself to do it, but that's not what the plan was. Hello? If your family dynamics aren't that you and your siblings get along, then your parents need to establish somebody to be in charge. But I will say this, even in that case, there needs to be one person in charge. Can I say it this way? Anything with more than one head is a monster. And it doesn't matter how good your family dynamics are. Anything with more than one head is a monster. In our family, because mom and dad lived here, I was primary. My brother was secondary. My brother's older than I by 3.5 years. Now, we co-do everything. There's not a decision made that we don't call each other about. Say why? I keep him informed, and we work together on it. We work in lockstep. I talked about giving the keys up this morning about David putting Solomon on his own mule, and when I had to take dad's keys. When my brother found out my dad tore into me like he did, my brother called my dad and tore into my dad. Oh, my soul. He said, you better be glad it's Craig and not me. You threaten the police on me, I'll have them at your house, take you to jail, Dad. He said, don't you ever do that to him or me ever again. I thought, man, you go. I got to live with him. You do it. If my brother ain't afraid to use words I'm not going to use. He gave my dad what for? A month later when my brother came up to be with my dad, he gave him what for a whole week while I was here. You say, what was that? We back each other. We put on the strong front. When we had to move dad out of his house to assisted living and dad didn't want to go. I'd have rather taken a beating. But my brother and I said, we're doing it. We're not taking no for an answer. We took him and he was grumpy. My wife and sister-in-law took him out dinner and shopping while we moved all his furniture in. Some of you men helped us, thank God. Got all his furniture in there, got his living room set up like his living room with his furniture, with his clock, all his stuff. They walked him in and they had a sign sitting out in the foyer that said, Mel Bush, welcome, new resident. We sat him down on the couch and he plopped down and took his picture. Took him up to his room and he said, is that my furniture? Yeah, Dad. This looks like my living room. That's what we wanted. Here's your bed. Here's your closet. Here's your clothes. Do I have to stay here tonight? Yep. And every night. Was it hard? Yeah. Was it best? Oh, by far. Now he loves it. Most of the time. You see, as much as possible, predetermine who's going to be the lead person. For instance, my dad is in Florida right now with my brother. He's lead person because he's with him. I'm not making decisions, he is. But if he has questions, he'll call me. And we work together on it. When Dad's been in the hospital, I've called him and said, look, this is what we're facing. This is what I think. This is what the doctors are saying. I believe this. What do you think? And we talk through it. You say, why do you do that? He's allowed to have input too. That's his dad too. Can I tell you how I do things? I've got an 83-year-old uncle. My dad's brother. My uncle Gary. He helped take care of my grandparents when they both had dementia and Alzheimer's. He's been a good guide for me. I've called him, and Gary keeps saying, he said, Craig, you don't have to call me. And I said, Gary, he's been your brother longer than he's been my dad. I said, I want the family to know what we're doing, and I'd like your input. You've been through this. I've even kept my dad's siblings involved. Say, why'd you do that? Do you have to? No, but I have a good family relationship with all of them so that we can work together. You know, it's not a matter of who the lead is. It's a matter of keeping everybody informed. So as much as possible, predetermine who's going to be the overseer. But let everybody have their part. My brother and I split duties. Volunteer to help in any way you can. But let me remind you, anything with more than one head's a monster. I had the giant task of clearing out Dad's house. Now, my brother flew up when it was time to pack everything and move things. But the whole time, my brother has been taking care of my dad's finances online. Takes care of the business aspect of things. That takes a big load off my shoulders. When Dad was at home, my brother paid all the bills at the house and everything else. He took care of all that. Had everything sent to him. And he just took care of it. I didn't have to think about it. That was something he could do from Florida that took extra time here that I didn't have. My brother just retired and he had extra time. And he said, look, let me take part of the load. Let me do what I can do. My brother flew up on Thursday, met my dad at the airport when Mindy took him where I was supposed to take him and was in surgery instead. Flew back with him. And I told my brother, I said, look, I'll fly down and make one of the trips so that you don't have to make. He said, look, he's coming down to be with my family. I'll sacrifice. He said, you're working. I'm not. I'll make both trips. No big deal. But I volunteered. Say why? Because I didn't want it to all be on my brother. Say, what is that? Working together. Well, my family's not that way. Maybe they would be if you quit being such a jerk sometimes. Sometimes you got to step up and say, whether you're a jerk and I'm a jerk, who cares? Let's get this because this is what's best for this person. Do my brother and I see eye to eye on everything? No. But when it comes to care for my parents, yes. Because it's about them. Boy, that's good stuff. And I'm going to make a statement here. That means this. Just because it's not done your way doesn't mean it's done wrongly. If there's other people involved, you have to take you out of the equation. As long as it's being cared for, keep your nose out of it. I don't know how else to say that. Don't play the blame game. You say, what do you mean? Well, something happens, don't blame somebody that's the caretaker. Well, they were with you and got sick. Yeah. And guess what? They could get sick no matter where they're at. Quit blaming everybody. Mistakes happen. Mistakes happen even in professional facilities. Can I tell you something? You make them too. Sorry to warn you of that. Split the duties amongst everybody so that everybody has something to do. And communicate with each other and keep everybody informed. You say, well, they don't want to. How do you know? Did you ask them? I got to hurry. Number 7. this is a legal issue. When the time comes and they should not drive, when the time comes and they're not making good decisions, you might want to write a note here. You need to get from your doctor something called a letter of capacity. A letter of capacity. That letter of capacity states that the patient is not legally responsible enough to make medical decisions. That is the piece of paper that enacts your power of attorney. Without that, your power of attorney is worthless. Plain and simple. I have on my phone my dad's capacity letter in my email. I've had to use it many a time. I have his POA in my phone. I have hard copies of it. When I went to the closing of his house, I had a copy of the letter of capacity. I had my POA. And I had all the paperwork that they had required. And I signed my name and my dad's name throughout the whole process. Say, why? What? And by the way, it had to go through all the legal scrutiny. They sent it to their lawyers and investigated it. Most all of that was done online, except the letter of capacity and the POA. But all the other things, his will and all the other things that showed all this, all that had to be given at one time. And it stood up for the sale of a home, which is about as scrutinizing as you can get, trust me. When you're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars, they scrutinize it pretty tight. The letter of capacity gives your POA the power to be used. Does that make sense to everybody? It's a very important letter that most people don't even know about. Only the doctor can do that. This is the legal document that you now begin making their decisions. Had my dad's home sold sooner, I was going to do a dummy closing, have my realtors here, and we were going to have dad sign papers so that he actually signed the papers in his mind for the closing of the house. But they were worthless papers. They're not legal and binding. Had I taken my dad to the closing, he couldn't have signed the papers even if he wanted to. Because of that capacity letter, it was illegal for him to sign those papers. Does that make sense to everybody? Be careful. You say, why is that important, preacher? Because some of you are going to make a mistake, and then you're going to have legal issues that are going to cost you hundreds of thousands of dollars. Keep your loved one informed what decisions are being made and let them see it's what's best for them. Dad, we're selling your house. It's time to get rid of it. Okay. Dad, we've divvied your things up. You'd be so proud of your family. Oh, I am. Now, he still doesn't remember we did it. And we go through it regularly. But it's okay. We've left him informed. Keep as much of the family on board as possible. But do what's best for the parent, not yourself. Not what others want, but what's best for the person that needs cared for. And I'm going to make a statement here. Please don't mistake this. You can't trust their decision making, and you're not 3 years old anymore and have to obey. They're the one that has to be treated like the three-year-old, not you. Yeah. You can't always believe what they say. They're not necessarily lying, but their mind doesn't see everything like it used to see. Right. Some of you deal with people with Alzheimer's and dementia, and they think normal. They don't think normal. You can't believe anything they say. I mean nothing. My wife can call my dad and say, Dad, I'm coming to pick you up for church. she'll get there and, where you at? Well, I don't know what day it was. Well, I just called you. No, you didn't. Yeah, we did. You can't let them make decisions when they risk their safety or somebody else's safety. There's no magic line, but this line is often sooner than you think. Let me get to the last part and I'm done. And I'm going to touch this carefully. When you have two aging parents involved, and one is the caregiver, don't let the caregiver's health fail because of giving care. Amen. Did you hear what I just said? This is a hard thing. Protect the caregiver's health. We're at that point with my in-laws right now. I'm getting ready to step up and take some aggressive action. Say why? Because the caregiver's health is starting to suffer because of giving care. That's the line. That's the line. Well, what if they don't want to agree? Doesn't matter. I'm tougher than they are. Help them find the help they need. You may have to get tough with them. While my mother-in-law was here, I had a couple talks with her. And I said, Mom, we're at a new point. She said, oh, I know, son. I said, well, then let's talk about it. And we began to talk about it. And I talked about it with my brother-in-law and my sister-in-law and my wife. And we're about ready to start making some serious decisions. You say, why? Because Mom's health is going to start going down very quickly if we don't. And we can't afford both going down all at one time. Keep the caregiver's spirits up. Keep their strengths up. Bring them into the situation, but they may not want to let go. But they don't have to let go. They just need to give up a little of it so that they're strong enough to keep it going a lot longer. Let them see this is a way for it to be carried on longer, not stopped. Again, so much that needs said that cannot be. I could probably talk for two more hours. Not going to. There's no perfect set of guidelines. None. There's no set of guidelines that'll show you. You plug in this prescription and or this recipe and there, here comes the prescription for it. But I've given you a set of guidelines by which to get ready. Giving you the wherewithal to, and by the way, knowing where all the important documents are, health insurances, life insurances, all the legal papers, Social Security, birth certificates, marriage certificates, wills, all those things, having a place for them and knowing where they are and access to them, knowing what life insurance is available and end of life stuff that's needing to be cared for and so many documents that need to be cared for legally. Look, listen to me. There's so much to this. Don't wait till it's an emergency before you start. You wonder why people want to pull their hair out and pull each other's hair out. This is why. If you'll do it soon enough, you don't have to worry about those things. And you get it done much farther in advance while everybody's in fairly good mind and body to do it. So that when the time does come, as in 1 Kings chapter 1, Bathsheba goes to David and says, I thought you wanted Solomon to be king. He said, I do. Well, Adonijah has just proclaimed himself king. And I thought you wanted your, oh, I didn't know that was taking place. So let's take care of that today. Thank God Bathsheba stepped up. Thank God the man of God, Nathan the prophet, stepped up. Thank God they stepped up and Solomon became king instead of Adonijah. Because Adonijah wasn't a good guy. 7 years later, Solomon killed him. Say why? Because he disobeyed horribly. So maybe we ought to take these guidelines and take them to heart. Those of you that have older parents, this is something you need to do. Those of you that are hitting late middle life, you need to do this with your kids for your life. And you younger families need to learn to do this with your families as you get older and transfer it down the line. And I promise you, it's not seamless. It's not well oiled, but it sure will be a lot less hectic, a lot less chaos, and a whole lot less frustrating. Amen. Know who's going to take care of whom and what. You might have special situations that are involved in this. I get that. But choosing the right people. You say, well, I don't know who to choose. Come ask the preacher. Let me help you and let me guide you through it. Say, well, I don't want to leave anything to my kids because they're just so bad. You can leave things to the church. You can leave things to others. We have a widow in our church that when she goes to heaven, everything she has goes straight to the church. Say, why is that? Because she doesn't have family that she trusts with anything. I don't ask you for it. But you say, well, I just don't know what. Come see me and let me help you through this. Some of you say, well, who would take my kids? Get some godly advice. Amen. Learn how to take care of those situations. That's what you put into your will. That's what you get enacted. That's why you talk to people now so that when the time comes, everybody's ready for it. On and on and on the situations go. Every situation is different. But there's enough in 2 Kings chapter 1 to make you read that story and think about it in a whole different light. 1 Kings, I'm sorry. 2 Kings 1, 2, I'm sure, just not about this. Yeah, time for more drugs. Let's bow our heads. I hope there's a lot of families that will have a lot less chaos and strife. I hope there'll be less bickering and arguing and fussing over the care of somebody and much better care because of this. I just want to help you.